Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. You are listening to Off the Crossbar. I am your host, James Jameson, also known as the guy who talks first. Joining me this evening will be K. Ross Reed and Adam O. Wells. Right now, they're not here. You see, there was a little bit of a scheduling conflict. I'm at home watching a baby, and neither of them could make it out here this week. So I'm going to be giving them a call in just a second, as soon as one of them sends me the number that I have to call and get them on the phone. This week, man, a lot of stuff actually did happen in the offseason. Rick Nash finally got traded. Shea Weber staying as a Nashville Predator. And, you know, I think personally the biggest news of the offseason so far is Jakub Voracek has finally re-signed with the Philadelphia Flyers. So I'm sure K-Ross has all kinds of things to say on that one. And we'll eventually be getting to him in just a little bit. I'm going to be throwing on some random little music here for you in just a little second, as I have to go and take care of a couple things. But you'll be back. We'll be back in just a second with more Off the Crossbar Live.
Hello.
Yeah, and that sound means It is time to go off the crossbar, and I'm hoping now that I'm joined by the one and only K. Ross Reed, and I guess, why not, Adam O. Wells.
Can you hear me, James?
I can hear you.
Excellent.
And you can probably hear my son in the background every once in a while. Little guy was super hungry, and he don't care if it's 8 o'clock. When dude wants to eat, dude's got to eat. And from what I understand, he's got a pretty full diaper right now. But thankfully, mommy is available. So gonna pass this guy off to mommy because I hear his diaper's full. That's what I'm told, at least. So, guys, what's up, man?
Probably the only time a hockey show started off that way.
Probably. But you never know. We're setting the standard is what we're doing.
Absolutely.
So, guys, what's up, man?
Not too much, man. You see this guy's truck. It looks fantastic.
I hear there's a lot of work going on.
Yeah, it's torn apart sitting in my garage, and it's got a brand new coat of red paint on it. It's going to get the T-stone bottom tomorrow. K-Ross here has done a wicked epic job, yo.
Well, good job, K-Ross.
Thanks very much. I had some good help, so thanks to Steve as well for coming up today.
Hey, guys, stuff happened this week.
Yeah, finally. We've been holding our breath all summer for some of these deals.
Yeah, I know. And as I said at the top of the show, don't know if you guys could hear me or not, but Jakub Voracek signed. I think that's the biggest deal so far.
I think we can pretty much call the summer wraps now. <We're> good.
That's all that mattered for me, really.
Voracek signed 2-2s in Detroit, and that pretty much sums up the free agency.
Yeah. What was Voracek today? Like 4 years, $17 million or something like that?
Not bad, though. I mean, if you're Philadelphia right now, you've really got to lock up everything you've got because clearly nobody wants to walk into your organization this summer.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, Voracek came into Philadelphia for Jeff Carter, and that worked out well for them.
Well, it really did. Well, I mean, Jeff Carter's had his moment in the sun right now, that's for sure, though. It's not like his time in Columbus went particularly well, but he didn't do bad for himself this season.
It's because he's the kind of guy that needs to play with a specific player in order to be good.
Well, good enough, though. I mean, hey, Hall & Oates never did anybody any harm.
Yep. Yep. Adam, you're awfully quiet over there, as per usual.
Well, you know, how about this? Voracek had 57 goals and 183 points in 319 regular season games.
All right. Okay, fine. So clearly nobody cares about this Jakub Voracek thing. I think the big news this week... Rick Nash.
Pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, well, this is what we've been waiting for all summer. This was the story of the offseason, and pretty anticlimactic. It really ended up exactly how everybody thought it would and was sort of an underwhelming deal. So,
yeah, underwhelming, I'd say, not the word that I would use. I would use more Columbus got hosed.
You had to get the feeling that as this lingered on later into the summer, though, that they weren't going to get the value they were looking for.
Yeah.
Nobody could afford to pay that.
I feel bad, though. I just feel bad because, you know, I like Columbus to a certain point, and I don't know. This whole situation just seemed really bad for them, and yeah.
I mean, it's bad, but it's I don't know if it's really bad. It's about what I expect. I mean, Dubinsky is a second-line player, maybe a first-line player in Columbus. And Isimov, I think, will almost definitely be a second-line player before the season is up in Columbus. And, you know, Tim Harrison may or may not be a high-quality NHL defenseman.
I'm just surprised.
What they got.
I'm surprised that, Michael Delzato wasn't included in this.
I'm sure that the asking price was a Michael Delzato, but realistically, this collective bargaining agreement is coming due. You have no idea what's coming up. The price is too high. The risk is too high.
Yeah, and it just, man. I'm just surprised, though, that was possibly the best deal that they could get.
It was also, you have to remember, Columbus really had very little swing in this matter. With Rick Nash really picking his list, what can you do, especially once it's known that Rick Nash is you know, whittled it down to just a few destinations? The cards really lie in the hands of the team that's looking to pull the trigger on the deal. And they really tied the organization's hands behind their back, in my opinion.
I'm honestly surprised that looking at what Columbus got, that Philly wasn't more of a player.
Say hi to Christina.
Hi.
Hi, Christina.
Philadelphia, unfortunately, though, when you look at it, they, as Paul Holmgren said, he was really trying to look to add to the young core without subtraction through free agency and through some, maybe through forcing some trades. But to be able to pull off a deal like that, I don't know that they have the organizational depth they once had. I mean, remember, they just cleaned house last summer, basically on the strength of the young players they believed they had in their organization. And then Jaromir Jagr walked out the door. I don't know that they can afford to clear house again and put all their eggs into one star player.
Yeah, I guess so. But you know what? Like, I'm a big fan of Rick Nash, as I'm sure a lot of people are. I think he can do a lot on a better team than what Columbus is. And knowing Philadelphia's history, like that's what kind of surprised me the most, really. Because like, you look at their history of not necessarily overpaying or anything like that, but just kind of almost like the Rangers were in the late 90s.
They're certainly not afraid to spend.
Yeah, that's almost the feeling that I get with Philadelphia nowadays. And looking at what the price was for Rick Nash, I honestly was expecting Philly to mortgage, you know, like give up Wayne Simmons, maybe Shen in there as well.
Didn't they pick up the other Shen?
Yeah, apparently the asking price was Shen, and they were not willing to part ways with that.
Oh, really?
That's the rumor that I've heard, and I believe I read it in a very reputable place.
The bathroom wall of your favorite hockey establishment?
I want to say it was in the Montreal Gazette, but I'm not 100% certain.
Oh, that's the equivalent of a bathroom wall.
Yeah, it's really it's the English version here in Montreal. The bathroom wall.
Pretty much. What do you think of Rick Nash being in New York now?
They are scary. It's awesome for New York. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're the New York Rangers, you have to love this deal.
I'm looking at this deal going, hey, a power play featuring Rick Nash, Marion Gaborik, Brad Richards, and, you know, Michael Delzato on the point.
And then you've got that nobody by the name of Callahan to fall back on wearing the C on his jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys are stacked. It's incredible to look at. I mean, from Lundqvist out, Tortorella behind the bench.
Ryan McDonough.
You really have to look at the Rangers now as the favorite to come out of the East next year. Neck and neck with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah. I like what the Rangers – this one trade, I like what they've done this offseason. And they didn't really give up much of their – like, they didn't really touch their core in order to do
it. No, they didn't. And, then, of course, they are going to have to rely on some guys to really step up and start playing secondary roles. Because, I mean, it's not like Artem Anisimov and Brandon Dubinsky were slouches out there on the ice. Both of these guys could hold their own in a very high-pressure hockey market that is New York City.
Yeah, and, just looking at this deal right here and look at some of the past deals and what he's done over the last little while, you got to look at, Glenn Sather in New York, be like, man, dude's a hell of a GM.
Yeah, you have to think that if the Rangers end up with the Eastern Conference title or making a deep run in the playoffs this year, this move makes him look like GM of the Year candidate as far as the early running for this in the coming season goes.
For sure. I mean, hey, he got rid of that Scott Gomez contract. And
genius.
Yeah, that was a while ago, but he was still able to get rid of it.
Yeah, and that was a magic trick that he was able to even get rid of it in the first place, let alone to pull McDonough back out of that deal. That's incredible.
Yeah, and you know, for as much as anybody wants to say about the guy, dude knows how to run a team.
Absolutely. And you got to love a guy with a good old-fashioned cartoon character persona chewing on that cigar in the press box.
Oh, for sure. He is the old boys club.
Absolutely. He looks like a villain from a Scrooge McDuck movie.
For sure. What was the other big news today?
Carolina, man. That's going to be sick.
Yeah, Carolina really bolstered their offense.
What did Carolina do?
Semin?
They signed Alex Semin today.
One year, $7 million?
$7 million.
I did not see that at all.
Oh. Epic.
Got to be up to date.
Yeah, and I was trying to feed a kid.
I mean, and you talk about a forward matchup that gives you, you know, scary options down the middle like the New York Rangers. You look at two Stahl brothers now with Alex Semin and Jeff Skinner down in Carolina, especially playing against that weaker Southeastern division. You have to imagine they're going to see the same benefit as Steven Stamkos in terms of just maybe being able to pad the stats a little bit more during the regular season games. I think you're going to see the scoreboard start to light up in Raleigh this year.
But only a one-year deal.
Well, and you had to assume that's what was coming. I mean, he's worth the money, but you got to make a guy like that prove it.
Yeah, he's got to earn it that first year. Then they'll sign him on multi-year if he does what he should
do. Yeah. I mean, his whole career he's been saying he just wants to be that number one guy. Well, here's his chance, and for big money. If he can play to the level of a 40-goal scorer as he has in the past, I mean, $7 million is easy money to lock him down. We did the comparables just last week on Zach Parise, and the guy's got better stats over the course of his career and very, very comparable length of career to go with it. So if he can do it, he could very well be the steal of the offseason.
Only problem is he might not get such a sweet deal next year depending on what happens in the CBA.
That's true.
Yeah, but, I mean, what can you do?
Yeah,
a guy like that,
$7 million
in the bank, and you're not going to get the Shea Weber term on your next contract if you're Alex Semin. You've had very fluctuating production.
Yeah, he had no chance of getting term or much.
No, he wanted to sign for $3 million to $3.5 million a year. Then you could look at a five-year deal on a guy like that.
Yeah, I don't think he was willing to sign that little amount for a long term. I think this is good for him because I think he's going to have a hell of a year in Carolina.
I think absolutely. And I really do see him pairing up with Jordan Stahl quite well in that second line. That's going to be scary.
You don't think Jordan's going to play with Eric?
Well, you know, rumor had it that maybe Jordan would look at playing a wing. Obviously, they're not going to move Eric Stahl off of his center ice position. I don't see it happening. I mean, if Stahl was going to be willing to play a wing, you think he would have played it for Sidney Crosby or for Evgeny Malkin somewhere in Pittsburgh. It's going to be a tough transition, whether it's his brother or not. You know, they could try the experiment, to be perfectly honest with you. At that point in your career, a centerman is a centerman, and I expect to see him there.
Yeah. All right, so that's a pretty damn good 1-2 punch.
Oh, it's scary offense, that's for sure.
And obviously with Skinner and now Semin in that lineup, hey, look at that look at that Carolina Hurricane team looking pretty damn good.
Yo, yeah, absolutely. And we all know Cam Ward is a stud between the pipes. When it comes down to it, he's had, you know, people forget how young this guy really is. I think he's only 25 or 26 years old right now. He had that deep run in that Stanley Cup win so young. People feel like he's been in the league forever. He's still got some time to mature with this core group of players that they've got down there, and it looks like they're going to be a good team for a few years to come.
Yeah, he's actually 28.
28? Well.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I thought he was a little younger.
No, 28. But also they have, I believe this is going to be the first full season with Kirk Muller behind the bench, because he only showed up this year, didn't he?
And he's not going to be afraid to let those players open up offensively and do what they want. He's got a reputation as a real player's coach.
Yeah, well, no, that's what I was going to say. Like, obviously, taking over almost halfway last season, there wasn't going to be much to salvage. But, hey, Hurricanes still did play pretty damn good hockey.
They were slightly over 500 under Kirk Muller, weren't they?
I don't remember 100%. But I know down the stretch they played some pretty good hockey.
Well, they did, yeah. They made a little surge towards the end there. Yeah. And you got to remember, there's a lot of guys on that team who were very young during some of Carolina's, you know, up and down years where they really seemed like every second year they were going to the Cup final or not making the playoffs.
Yeah.
And these guys remember how to win. There it hasn't been that far removed from a lot of these guys' careers.
No, that's for sure. And so I'm going to be real looking forward to watching some of them Hurricanes play this year. That should definitely be some pretty good hockey.
Yeah, man, it's going to be exciting to watch. I really think that Semin can come into his own there, maybe. Yes, I do. Sorry.
Thank you, Sir O. Wells.
Oh, no problem.
And one of the other big stories this week, Shea Weber staying in Nashville.
$110 million.
Absolutely. As we predicted last week on the show, actually.
Yeah, the second, I believe, the second biggest contract of all time.
Yeah, this year it will be he will have the second highest single season salary of all time, and the contract length and overall price tag are the second highest of all time.
Who's the first?
Would it be Alex Ovechkin? Didn't he sign for slightly more?
Yeah, he signed for more. Yeah.
Did he?
He must have.
I thought so.
Ah, jeez.
He had like a 13-year contract, no?
Check that out. Yeah, I believe it was negotiated by his mother as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think sports agents are scary. You should see the wrath of an angry Russian hockey mom.
Ovechkin was 13 years, $124 million.
There you go. Yeah.
So
that saved himself 7% on the deal by having his mom do it instead of the agent.
You wouldn't let your mom negotiate your contracts?
7% of $124 million? Yeah, I'd let her do it. Absolutely. I'd save that kind of money.
You think she could get you $124 million?
I'd give her 4% if she could.
10? Give your own mom 10. You $124 million.
Kovalchuk got 17 years. What? No. What was...
Yeah, Kovalchuk also had a very large... I think that was 110 as well. But I think spread over a little bit more.
Yeah, this is 17 year, apparently. So he's 44.
Yeah.
Jesus. That's a long time to stay in Jersey.
Yeah.
I don't think he's looking at that going, that was a good idea.
I think he may be after this season. He's probably pretty confident given the way this year turned out for them.
Kovalchuk was only 15, not 17.
Okay.
Or, wait, hold on. Yeah, no, because the original one was 17-year, $102 million.
And then they nixed that.
One was $100 million over 15.
That was the one the league shot down.
Yeah, the first one was a 17-year, $102 million deal. That's the one that the league shot down, and then they revised it for $100 million over 15.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you have Zach Parise and Suter sign in for whatever the hell they signed for. I don't even remember at this point.
$98 million, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, over what, 11 years?
14 years? 13 years?
Yeah, something like that.
13. Yeah.
Oh. So Shea Weber and, you know, definitely looking at the press conference on the announcement of the whole contract thing, definitely looking like he is, in fact, confident in Nashville, unlike what I was thinking. I didn't think that he was happy with the management situation over there, but it seemed that if not, then he puts on a really good fake smile.
Well, and he'd better if he doesn't feel that way.
Yeah.
He's got a decade and a half to be there, and he might want to start off on a good foot.
It'll be interesting to see, because this statement... You know, this was a real statement for Nashville.
This was a statement, and you have to assume that taking their time to make a decision like that, in a very real sense, I'd be willing to bet that ownership was deciding whether or not they were ready to be full-time hockey owners, as opposed to just businessmen with a very heavy interest in a hockey team. When you get to signing a player like that long-term and you look at the verge of the success that the Nashville Predators have had, I know a lot of people have said that they had some talent walk out the door and they don't look as good moving forward with the loss of Ryan Suter. But if you've got a Norris Trophy finalist and a Vezina finalist on your team, you're doing okay.
Yeah. Not that bad.
It's a good place to start.
Oh, for sure. And it'll be curious because I was surprised when they re-signed Sergei.
Yeah, I think that's a fair contract, though.
I was surprised.
I mean, you look at a guy who's in the 50-point range, $3 million a year is – I think he maybe gets overshadowed by his brother's lazy reputation. I feel like Sergei is the better of the Kostitsyns.
He was the better of the Kostitsyns, but he still wasn't great in Montreal.
$3 million isn't a ton of money.
It's more than we would have been given him. It's more than he would have been given.
Wasn't it Andre that they signed, not Sergei?
No, Sergei signed this week.
Did it? Was it?
I believe it was. That was the information I got from Adam before the show started.
Oh, okay. I thought they signed the older one.
No, it was the younger one.
Lazy one.
No. I don't believe that's the case.
I get them mixed up all the time. I thought they signed the lazy one, and that's when I was like, oh, I'm surprised they signed him.
Well, I think it was Adam who said earlier, Sergei actually led the team in goal scoring this year.
Yeah. Nashville signed Sergei Kostitsyn to a 2-year deal worth $6 million. He
led the team in goals with 23.
Led the team in goals with 23 and was tied for team high in points.
All right, so yeah, if it's Sergei and he's not the lazy one, I'm okay with the deal.
Well, I mean, $3 million for a guy who leads your team in scoring is a bargain at any rate in the National Hockey League.
Oh, for sure, yeah. I think he's a good, I'm not going to say pillar, but I think...
It's also funny that their top defenseman next year will make $14 million more than that.
That is true. But I think he's an addition to the team. He's not necessarily going to be one of the guys that carries them anywhere, but he's a good accent.
Now, yeah, he's a great top six forward. Yeah. And at $3 million, you're paying him, I think, accordingly.
And now they just need to go find that top three forward.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean,
basically, that top forward is what they need.
If the Shea Weber situation had resolved itself a little quicker, you may be looking at Alex Semin wearing the disgusting mustard gold next year.
Hey, I like that jersey.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It looks like that baby threw up squash.
My baby has yet to throw up squash yet. that looks like.
I have a feeling you will get there, my friend.
Maybe it's the fact that I'm colorblind, but I don't know. I really like those jerseys.
No, you'd know. You'd know it. Squash is very distinctive.
I like those jerseys. I'm a big fan. I'd like to get one.
I'm a fan of the logo. I really do like Nashville's design, and I'm a fan of the organization. I think mustard gold is a terrible color choice for any professional sports organization.
I really want to go check out a game in Nashville, though. Everything I've heard about it says they're one of the top places in NHL to see a game.
I imagine it would be. Nashville's a very fun city.
Yeah. And just the acoustics in there, apparently it's Music City, right? So they've designed this place as one giant music hall. And just the crowds cheering and everything, it's supposed to rival the Bell Center.
Oh, yeah. Bell Center is one of the worst places to watch a hockey game.
Yeah, because everybody...
Only if you're losing.
Yeah, man. When the Habs score and the Habs are in the lead and they net a nice goal, anybody, even if it's... Anyway, whatever. It's electric in the Bell Center. I've been to Madison Square Garden, which is also fantastic, but it's got nothing on the Bell Center because they're supposed to be the other one.
I'm just saying, Bell Center, worst place to watch a hockey game.
What?
Worst place to watch a hockey game is the Bell Center. I enjoyed watching a game in Tampa Bay more than I did at the Bell Center.
Tampa Bay's also got a great environment, though. To be fair.
Yeah, and you don't like the Habs.
That's true.
That's not even the point. It's that, and I think we've gotten into this.
And hold on. When were these games that you were at? Like, it's not been your entire life, right? It's only been maybe in the last couple of years.
What, the Bell Center games?
Yeah, like the Bats.
I've never really thought the Bell Center was all that great of a place to watch a hockey game.
Yeah, but are you talking about just the place itself or the crowd, the atmosphere? The Habs home game is nuts.
Everything. Everything about it.
Okay.
And that's the opinion of an Oilers fan who lives in Montreal. But that's fun.
Well, yeah, and like I got into that I got into that a little bit in that I don't even know if that ever even made it up onto the website. You know, like the being an away fan in a city that... You know, like I'm an.
Oh yes, you're just jumping off your couch like that. Yes, I remember.
What was that?
Yeah, that never went online.
It never went online.
No, man.
Oh,
post that.
Yeah, you didn't. You managed to do like 10 takes of that, and it just.
Oh well. But yeah,
he was lost in the archives forever.
That's true. That I don't think that ever went up online. But being an away team fan your entire life. There's a very different way of, like, going to see a hockey game when you're the fan of the away team is nothing like what you guys get to experience every time you go to the Bell Center.
To be fair, I've only been to the Bell Center once, and it was for a preseason game.
And he was at Fenway Park in Boston wearing his Yankee stuff, man.
That was fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Okay, see, now here's the thing with that one. The Red Sox-Yankees rivalry, well, everybody knows that. Like, that's a storied rivalry. And most of the time, like...
That's so awesome.
Most of the time, you're not going to be the only one.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're a Yankee fan at Fenway Park, chances are...
There are other beer-soaked, black-eyed people in the stands with you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Not that many.
There's at least 3,000 people there that are also Yankee fans.
It's not like you're all sitting together and got each other's back.
Well, no, but you're still not the only one there. When you're an Oiler fan and you go see a game at the Bell Center, you're one of 26 people.
Fair enough.
Out of 22,000. That's the difference. It was like, I went out to Edmonton for my honeymoon, my wife, best honeymoon you could possibly ask for, got tickets to go see an Oiler game. And finally, I got to experience what it's like watching your favorite team play with other people that share that interest with you.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
It was one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
Yeah, I've only had it once here in Montreal, and it's the same.
Yeah, but I saw a Oilers Flame game. We were there for the
That's awesome.
Alberta. And just in the case with the Red Sox and the Yankees, you could have almost easily made the case that half the building was Flames fans.
And that's a little bit more rivalry by proximity as well. So, I mean, you get much more overlap in a game like that.
Yeah, it's a 2.5-3 hour drive from Calgary to Edmonton. So if you can't go check out the game in Calgary, it's not a huge thing.
Leafs fans drive over 4 hours to get to Habs games and vice versa. When they play each other, places
oh, for
is full
sure.
of Leafs.
Oh, yeah, no, rivalries and fans, they will do just about anything for it. And so, you know, I was there, and still almost half the building, you could say, was easily Flames fans. When the Flames scored, it was almost as if it was a home game for those guys. But when the Oilers scored, it was still definitely a home. It's like a home game for both teams almost. It was a surreal experience. I've never quite experienced anything like that. But yeah, I will find that piece that I did on being an away fan, and I'll try and get
it
back up on the website because I can't believe I never posted that.
Do it,
you
man.
You worked very hard on it.
But anyway, how about your Oilers signing Gagne to a $3.2 million deal?
That was another one that I was a big fan of because as I saw many people mention it, you know, this is kind of – it's good for him so that he can stick around in Edmonton and be a part of this year's rebuilding process because I think that's going to be very beneficial for him. It's good for the team because they don't have to lock him up at a higher salary for long term, which is most likely what he wanted. So you give him the short term, like the 1 year deal at three, whatever it is. He's still going to be a restricted free agent next year. And so he's going to be just fitting in your top six with the fantastic talent that you have. Go out there, make him earn his big money. And if he can go out there and earn it, then give it to him.
A lot like a Stinson.
Yeah, very much like that.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that deal, actually. I think he's the perfect complement to, as you said, mature with the kids that are surrounding him. He's still, obviously, I mean, well within the age category that, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, when everybody's hitting their stride, it would be nice to have locked him up next year as a restricted free agent for maybe a 3-year deal at that point.
Yeah, and, you know, you said earlier, people forget that Cam Ward is young, you know, he's still 28, which is still fairly young. I'm sure people think Cam Ward is well into his 30s at this point. But a lot of people forget Sam Gagne is totally like 24 years old. Actually, I think he's even less than that. He's only like 22, actually.
Exactly. I mean, anybody who's been in Edmonton for more than 3 seasons is an old goat at this point.
Yeah, so, you know, everybody keeps thinking, oh, well, Sam Gagne, he's been around for a while. No, dude's 22 years old.
I'm pretty sure Ryan Smith played on a line with Craig McTavish. Actually.
Maybe. Who knows? I think maybe at one point he did. But yeah, born in 1989. So he's really not that old.
that's quite young.
That's quite a bit different. So, no, 23. Well, no, he'll be turning 23 in August, actually. So he is still only technically 22 right now.
So happy birthday, Sam Gagne.
What was that?
So happy birthday to him.
Yeah. Happy early birthday, Sam. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that signing. I've never made it a secret on this show that I'm a big fan of Sam Gagne. I think he's going to be a big part of the Oilers' rebuild going forward. I thought pretty much from the get-go that he was better than Andrew Cogliano, but I was also a fan of Cogliano. I thought he had really good speed for the size player that he was, and the times that I was able to see him, even live, I remember seeing him over at the Bell Center for one game. That dude had some wheels, man. And he could use them to his advantage. And I still remember him blowing past, I forget which defenseman it is on the Canadiens, just kind of going in and taking a nice snapshot, far side, put it in. Fantastic. I was like, hey, yeah, I want to keep that guy on the team. I'm a big fan of that. But obviously they decided to part ways with Cogliano on that one. It'd be nice to get him back, but I don't think he'd fit into the lineup at this point.
No, I mean, at this point, you've got your top six pretty much in Edmonton. If you're looking for anything, you're looking for a grinder for the bottom six.
Yeah, but you're mainly looking for your D right now.
And of course, that defenseman.
Yeah, Oilers also, they did lock up Yakupov with his entry-level three-year contract there.
Yep. Well, no surprise there.
As did the Habs with Galchenyuk. Yep.
Yeah. How long do you think he's going to stay with the big club? Do you think he's going to get his nine games?
Who are we talking about now?
The guy with Canadiens.
Galchenyuk?
Yeah.
No. He's only played
a couple games last season, too. Right? Yeah, because he was injured. So, no, they're going to get him in shape.
Yeah, here's a guy who played three games of his junior season last year. You'll probably see him in Hamilton, but he's a top six kind of guy. They're going to want to get him those kind of minutes. He'll be much better off in Hamilton for the next, I would even say, two seasons. You don't want this guy coming up and playing minutes on your third line. He's not that type of player. You groom him until he's ready, and when he's ready, you plop him in the position he's meant to be in.
Well, that's a smart thing to do, but, I mean, hopefully the new management will adopt that kind of thing. Sometimes the Habs have been pretty rash in getting people up and wasting them.
You know,
okay, so while we're on the subject of the Canadiens here, I believe I may have sent this one out to you guys. It's kind of my question, as you are both Canadiens fans here. It has been announced, like, Shane Doan has specifically come out and told his agent that he wants to meet with the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, they're meeting next week.
Yeah, so he's coming up next week because tomorrow is the deadline that he gave to Greg Jamieson and that ownership group to make headway on the sale of the Coyotes. If there is no progress from there, he will look at other options. However, he does want to stay in Phoenix, but he does want to keep his options open. So he's going to be coming to meet in Montreal possibly next week. And how realistic of a chance do you think there is that the Canadiens sign him?
You know, it makes me excited as a Habs fan to hear the rumor, and that scares me. I don't want to believe it because it's not going to be true, unfortunately. If they were looking at a player along those lines, I would have to think they would have at least spoken to Jaromír Jágr rather than dismiss it. Listen, he would fill in beautifully in that gap that we were talking about in last week's episode. In the second line left wings position, he's built to be there. He's exactly what we need. You have to think that Montreal, I mean, unless they've got a deal in place to move a Rene Bork out the door, with the money they've got to sign PK Subban, I think they have something like $7 million in cap space left.
Yeah, they're around
able to work that deal. Unless they can move somebody, unless they plan on burying Gomez, unless they have a way to cut salaries somewhere. I mean, I would love to see it. I think it may be wishful thinking.
See, that's the thing. When you talk about cutting salary and whatnot, I see a lot of people, like when it was announced, I believe I saw it on TSN or whatever like that, and somebody made the point, well, hey, Canadians have about $7.5 million in cap space. Doan's going to command at least four and a half.
Yeah, and he's worth it.
Oh, he is, 100%. He proved that in Phoenix this year, and he's proved that over the course of his career. He is easily worth $4-4.5 million. But with $7.5 million in cap space, that leaves less than $3 million, essentially, to sign PK Subban, because you do have to leave a little bit of space here and there just in case there's an injury and you need to bring somebody in or this or that or whatever, you know? And everyone's just like, oh, well, yeah, but it's also called burying Gomez and Hamilton. You can't. You can't just bury Gomez and Hamilton unless he agrees to it.
Well, you could.
Well, no, he has a no-movement clause.
I don't think that counts on vertical movement, does it?
Yes. That's all movement completely whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah. Really? Well, it's a movement clause.
Yeah, I suppose that's the difference between trade and movement.
That's the thing. The difference between a no-trade clause, if it's a no-trade clause, you can bury that guy in the minors. But a no-movement clause, you can't move him vertically or to another team.
Well, then, look, in order to get Shane Doan into the system then, and again, I would love to see it. I don't think it's likely. You have to get Rene Bork out the door and one of Weber or Diaz, because those are guys that are on the books.
Weber,
that are places where you could cut. Everybody else.
Listen, before Rene Bork, I believe his is a no trade. I don't think it's a no movement, but his is definitely at least a no trade.
I think he could be convinced to move to the right team.
I wouldn't doubt it, but all I'm saying is it'll be real tough.
And again, the reasons why I certainly don't think Shane Doan coming to town is likely. I would love to see it. I'm a huge fan. I mean, how do you not like this guy? There's a guy who just simply plays the game the right way.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Although I didn't like I'm not going to call it lack of sportsmanship, but his crybaby approach to the end of the LA series.
Yeah, that did not go well.
I think Adam liked that one. That was a little over the top for me, you know, considering everything. Yeah, that was a little over the top for me, considering how much, like, it's to call the refs out as much as they did, and for those refs to consistently always give Doughty the short end of that stick. I thought it was funny and in poor taste, but hey, that's me.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the most sportsmanlike reaction.
But
I mean, calling out the refs at that level a little bit much,
especially as captain of their team, he's got to be putting out a proper image. That was stupid.
But you know, that's the result of having a camera in your face 24 hours a day, 7 days a week as a pro athlete right now. You know what? Give the guy 15 seconds to calm down. Maybe he doesn't run his mouth.
Yeah, maybe. Although he was still pretty adamant about it a couple days later. Like when they were at their lockers and whatnot.
He was just pretty caught up with it. A little bit of pride on the line at that point.
Yeah, but I'd still take him on my team because he's still a hell of a hockey player.
I
forget which All-Star year it was, but it was like the first year that they ever did the All-Star relay. Shane Doan won.
I remember that. That was a while ago.
Yeah, with the shootout relay there. Shane Doan won. Of all the guys in the league that you would think to win a breakaway shootout relay, Shane Doan's not the number one guy that I would put in that winning circle.
Hey, you know what? Some guys just have finish.
For sure. And you know what? He'd be a great addition to any team. It's just that it'd be hard to slot him into a lot of different teams.
He would fit here in the lineup. It's the salary that gets us.
Yeah, and I'm actually surprised at that. I would have to see Montreal in this cap kind of issue. Man, they're lucky the cap raised like what, $10 million?
Oh, absolutely. But you know what? They're spending's never been the issue. It's getting value on the dollar that's been the issue here in Montreal.
I'm just surprised to see them so close to the ceiling and not have PK signed.
You know what? It when it comes down to it, Scott Gomez takes up such a huge chunk of cap space.
What is he, 7.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's 7.5. Markov is 5?
5.
Cabaret is 5?
4.25.
Yeah. Rene Bork is 4.
I think he's 3.5, actually.
3.5? Okay. Gionta is what, 5 or 6?
Yeah, he's 4.5 or 5.
Yeah.
Gionta is 5. Plek is 5. Gomer is 7.357. Cole is at 4.5. Bork, 3.3. Prust at 2.5. Moen at 1.8. And then you've got Markov at 5.75 and Cabaret at 4.25.
And to be fair with Rene Bork's salary, what a lot of people forget is, you know, yeah, you have a disgruntled winger who, you know, was once a 30-goal guy who you're now paying $3.3 million. But you really got him in place of a disgruntled winger who was once a 30-goal guy who was getting $6 million.
Oh, yeah. Hey, look, I believe it was on this show that I said I'm okay with that deal. The Camilleri for Bork trade, I was more than okay with because I've seen a hell of a lot of Calgary Flames games. That dude used to kill the Oilers.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know what it was about playing against the Oilers, but the Oilers were always the team that brought the best out in him.
And it's probably because they were terrible then.
Not that, because the goals that he was scoring, though, weren't necessarily super highlight reel goals, but they were more just like the, okay, dude put in the second and the third effort.
And he's a shooter. He's a dirty goal scorer. And if he gets his game going, if he can get his feet moving to the level that the NHL requires right now, he still has it in him to be a force. He's still a young man as well.
Oh, yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what he can do this year in Montreal, because obviously last year with the trade, I'm sure he was not really feeling it or anything like that. It'll be interesting to see how he takes on the role here in the city this year, because hey, he could add. I can easily see him picking up 30 goals.
That's a bold statement.
If he works, yeah,
he's done it before.
If the dude works for it.
Or been in the ballpark.
He can. Man, guy can easily put up 30.
Yeah, he put up 27 in back-to-back years.
It'll just be a matter of whether or not he's motivated. Can
motivate yourself then. Come on. $3.3 million? It's ridiculous, man. I don't know Gomez.
The money isn't a motivating factor for these guys. That should be obvious by now. Money is not what motivates these guys to go perform every night and win all these games or win all these championships or anything like that.
No, not
that's not what these guys need for the motivation. I don't know what Bork needs to light that fire under him. I don't know if Michel Therrien can do it, but if that guy can get going, easily a 30-goal scorer.
I'd like to see it, man. I'm absolutely hopeful for it, because I tell you right now, I certainly don't even see Shane Doan necessarily as a 30-goal scorer in that role next year.
Yeah, I don't see Shane Doan as a 30-goal scorer at this point in his career at all. I see him getting a good 20. Oh, boy. Hey, there you go. I see him getting a good 20, helping out quite a bit on the developmental side of your younger players. That's the kind of guy that he is at this point.
Well, in theory, having Brian Gionta back in the fold on a permanent basis this year will do exactly that for the Canadiens as well.
Somebody over here is not very happy. I don't think he likes the idea of Rene Bork being a 30-goal scorer.
I'm with him, to be honest with you.
I don't think he likes Rene Bork at all. All right, so no Rene Bork jerseys for this guy growing up, that's for sure. where are we taking this whole show next? Any other signings to talk about?
You know what? I in terms of major signings, we're I think up far.
The Leafs signed Kulman on a 2-year deal to avoid arbitration. What do you do?
All right, you guys talk amongst yourselves and figure out something. I'm going to take this little guy off for a quick break, you guys carry the show for the next 2 to 3 minutes.
No problem. On the subject of Gomez.
On the subject of Gomez.
How about him winning he won a car. He won an Acura MDX at his very own celebrity golf tournament in Anchorage. He got a hole-in-one in a par three.
A hole-in-one, really?
Yeah, and won a $50,000 SUV.
And a hole-in-one last January, I believe, too, against the Carolina Hurricanes. About as rare a feat. Good for him, though. That's impressive.
Yep. It's a good feat on the golf course.
Maybe it means he's getting his mojo back. Maybe he's got his momentum swing. Maybe he's...
The turning point. That hole-in-one.
You know, I've heard the Tigers never hit one.
Well, there you go.
All those years on a golf course. You know what? Yeah, Gomez coming back. It's funny to even consider him as a he's such a big part in the salary cap discussion, but I mean, where does he even fit in the Canadiens lineup right now? Is he a fourth line player? He has to be, I suppose.
Well, that's it. I mean, he's going to be relegated to the fourth line because you can't be moving really anybody
well,
else.
Yeah, he's the center, and he's not going to take Desharnais' place.
No.
You have to give Plekanec the benefit of the doubt on the second line. Yeah.
He's done nothing to be demoted from.
He has been our most consistent forward over the last 3 or 4 seasons, hands down. I mean, you got to believe in the power of the turtleneck.
It's all in the turtleneck.
Of course.
Middle of the summer, that guy's wearing a turtleneck like that.
So that begs the question. I mean, you believe in Lars Eller. You need him at the center ice position as well. So where does Gomez even go if he does come back? I don't see him slotting in any higher than any of the three centers you've got.
Unless he comes in on
and
a
then,
pair.
And then you've got coming up behind him. Who
signed on a $3.25 million. That's his entry-level deal.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just minimum for the three-year deal at this point. That's the rookie average, I believe, right?
$3 million?
1.1 is the rookie cap.
Something like that. But,
I mean, for yeah, okay, guy, you're right. Going to give him max money.
Yeah,
especially a guy like that. I mean,
3.25.
Talk about question marks at center ice. How about this guy playing 3 games last year and he's your solution? I hope that he's the steal of the draft. I hope that he is what they were saying. I hope that he's better than Yakupov was the tout on him. You know, this time 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
Yeah. No, but I mean that's the thing. I think it was probably just him being very cautious and not wanting to blow his chance. He tweaked. I think it was his back.
No, it was his knee.
It was his knee.
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he probably wanted to make sure that you know he'd got all the help on it and all the work on it he could before getting back in, because he knows he's gonna draft top 5, top 10 at one
point. You would hope so. Or he knows. My knee's shot. Don't get back on the ice and prove it to anybody. Get the $3 million while you can. I mean, maybe he's also not an idiot.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I wouldn't do that in his position.
He's going to go DiPietro.
You know, it's a dirty word when it comes to contract signings, the DiPietro situation. But you know what? The center ice is first position is just such a huge question mark for so many teams in the league. The Habs certainly are not immune to the system, and they've got what I feel to be a whole lot of potential second line guys. Desharnais, I like. I don't know if you can trust him at this point in his career yet. He's a smaller player who benefits from being between two very good hockey players.
Yeah, I think he proved that you can't trust him this season. He did a solid job.
I think he did a solid job, but I don't know if you can trust his long-term health.
Well, that's the thing. His size is going to be a big hindrance
to him
because he's, what, 5?
And you got to think Fleck is feeling sour grapes right now. After having sat around and been the most consistent player on this team for the last half decade, and here comes Desharnais. He gets his gripe between Pacioretty and Cole. When they're finally wingers that perform, Fleck doesn't get to play with them.
Well, Plek was slumping. Like, there were a couple times where they put him up there before they figured out the Desharnais formula or whatever.
But even still, you would think that he would get more chances than not. I like
Plek.
Plek
had his kid this year, too, and everything, right?
Yeah, it's true.
I think Plek had a lot in his mind. I think he's going
to
come back. And
it's
I think
hard to find quarterbacks that small.
No, but I think there might be a little bit of competition for that first line spot. If Plek can land.
I don't think they're
going
to break up that line.
I don't think they would.
At a situation where they're going to have to run 2 lines if they can get either Rene Bork or another winger to click. You've got to assume Gionta's going to be back in full swing. And I like Gionta and Plekanec together.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
Wouldn't it have been awesome to see Plek playing with Jágr?
Yeah. I mean, Plek, Jágr, and Gionta would be fantastic second line on any team in this league. And clearly we found out last year that Cole Pacioretty and Darnay are a fantastic top line.
Yeah, definitely. They were fun to watch, man. That was cool. To have a consistent line that could, you know, just go and light it up.
But this, like Shane Corson was the last guy. That's crazy.
Oh, man. Oh, speaking of stuff you call, the Penguins did, in fact, end up firing that doctor finally after 24 years of service, and they hired a new team.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Well, yeah, it was soon.
What was his name? Charles Burke was removed after 24 years.
Yeah. You got to assume that when Sidney went down with that knock that after trying to come back the first time, somebody was getting fired. At the end of the day, you just have to save face and make it an accountability type situation.
Yeah. So what else? James, too.
So, guy got fired, eh?
He brought us to the bathroom.
So this little guy right here, he's semi falling asleep right now, so I think I can join back into the show. Speaking of, we are there we go, and hey, it is now 9 o'clock, so it's gonna be a great.
Well, James is figuring out
You're listening to
the Off the Crossbar Live Radio Show.
I think I'm listening to the woman at the Tim Hortons attraction, to be honest with you.
Goodbye, man. You're cutting in and out like crazy.
Yeah, that's you guys are cutting in and out like crazy as well. So,
all you, man.
Actually, here, you know what? I've got an idea, Adam. You might get disconnected from this call, and then I will bring you back on. How's that?
All right, float your boat, bud.
All right, hold on. There we go. I'm just gonna hang up on Adam right there. I believe. I think I hung up on him. Adam, are you still there? No, Adam's not there anymore. So I'm going to remind everybody that you're currently listening to Off the Crossbar Live, brought to you, as always, by our friends over at backsportspage.com. You can go check them out. I'm going to try and bring Adam back into the call now. And you can also check out Adam's latest article on www.offthecrossbar.com. There's a lot of hissing and going on over there on Adam's end. Not quite sure what.
In fact, I think it's gotten worse.
Has it?
Yeah, I believe it has.
You guys sound better. That's for sure.
You just did there. Well, we'll keep going for a bit. Let's see what happens.
All righty. I want to take this opportunity, as I am currently holding my son, who is hopefully going to fall asleep. I want to wish a big congrats to Craig. Oh man, you guys are terrible right now. All right, hold on a second. Here, Adam, are you there, Adam?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you there? Do you have a telephone near you by any chance? Hello.
Yes.
All right. Text me the number that you want me to call your house at. All right. I love how we're doing this. All right. We're going to work out the technical difficulties that we're having right now on the air. And, So, yeah, big congrats to Craig for his little baby being born. I know exactly how the feeling goes. It's an awesome feeling, and I'll be curious to know if Craig's going to be in any shape whatsoever to be playing hockey this Sunday. Myself personally, I'm not in any kind of shape to be playing hockey this Sunday. I've already taken myself out of the lineup for that one and for the foreseeable future. I know that my wife was a big fan of that. That one going back to the topic of playing through the pain, which you can go check out on www.offthecrossbar.com. We did a whole segment on that one with Dr. Dale, and then I kind of revisited the matter.
Private terminal.
That's Adam telling me what number to call him at right now, so I'm going to be giving him a call in just a second. Yeah, you can go check that one out. Oh, boy. There we go. You can go check that one out on the website, all about playing through the pain. And kind of the big difference that I had once once this little guy right here was born, because prior to playing, I could tell you right now that, well, prior to him being born, I could tell you that I had no issue whatsoever with playing through the pain. And once he was born, that kind of all changed completely. And there you go. There's the phone dialing right there. Hopefully we're going to hear Adam and K-Ross on the other end in just a bit.
Hello, hello.
Yo.
Oh, hello. Are you there?
Yes, we are.
We are for real this time.
Awesome stuff, guys. So I was just telling the guys that I am not going to be playing this Sunday. I believe I've already told both of you that due to physical injury and whatnot, that my shoulder really not in good shape right now.
Yeah, dude, have you actually gone to see the doctor this time?
I have not gone to the doctor yet, mainly due to the fact that my Medicare card expired in June and I have yet to get it renewed yet.
You're not legal.
No. My 1 month old son has a Medicare card and I don't, so that just goes to show you how lazy I am at the moment. But probably next week.
You were at the hospital.
Yeah, I'm going to be going to get that probably renewed next week, as well as my driver's license, because that's going to be up at the end of August as well. So, but yeah, big congrats to Craig, and we'll see what kind of condition he's to play in on Sunday, if he's even going to be there at all. I don't know. Who knows? But actually, that brings up a point that, K-Ross, if you're cool with it, I'd like to get into it, because I know you and I were semi-discussing it before. Adam was left completely in the dark on the subject. But what was that? Sorry?
That it wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, I know. K-Ross, you cool with getting into it right now?
Yeah, let's go for it. I mean, listen, it's not a pleasant subject, but it is what it is.
No, it's not necessarily a pleasant subject whatsoever, but one that we're both feeling right now, and kind of for different reasons, but I definitely feel where you're coming from on yours. And we're talking about for me personally, it's the game that I loved absolutely almost more than anything besides my wife and my son. I'll do just about anything to be playing some hockey. And right now it is easily one of the least fun things in my life.
Yeah. I think I've been there before.
And, I know K-Ross, you're almost, I don't know if you're as far into that feeling as I am right now, but I know you're frustrated.
Yeah, you know what, and it does come from a different place, and the truth is that I'm very much deep into that feeling where it's I think a dilemma that a lot of people who sort of grow up with a game end up experiencing at some point in their life, which is as you become an adult and you want to continue to play, there comes a line where you understand the reasons that you're playing, and it becomes less about, I mean, it's always about winning when you play and you're keeping score. You've got your referees and your uniforms. And if you're in an organized league, it's great. And listen, it's the thrill of competition never leaves you, and that's the point. But from where I'm coming from, we've found ourselves in a few instances lately playing against some teams that have taken, let's just say physical liberties in pursuit of their goal of winning this beer league game. And it's gotten to the point where it's really difficult to keep your cool when you're really just sort of being physically attacked over the score of a Sunday night beer league game that really it isn't really worth anything
I know personally myself, I'm right there with you on that one, because this is our third season playing in the league that we're playing in right now, and I'm finding really right now it's never been this bad. Like just the sheer jerkness of every team that we're playing against, it seems.
And that's what it is.
I don't know if it's that bad. The first season there were a lot of idiots too. But I mean, the fact is that we're best suited. of all the teams in our division, our average age has got to be the highest. Like, you know, we're almost ready to be legitimately into a 35-plus division. And all these young punk kids are, you know, out there trying to prove that, thinking there's a scout in the stands every game, and you got kids who are chopping and dirty, and just, you know, they don't have to wake up and go to a job the next day. They don't care if they're a little bruised up, you know. They're going to wake up at noon and then go
well,
to their jobs.
And even if you are willing to pay the price, it's at what point are you really willing to trip a guy in the corner, to take a swing at a guy's ankles, to, you know, throw an elbow, to slew foot a guy.
To run a goalie.
And that's really the point that we're at where, look, if you're playing for even a midget hockey trophy, all right. You know what? Play with that edge. Play with to that extent. And there are, listen, there are leagues for that. We're not a team that shows up that way. We're honestly just a group of guys that likes to play fast hockey. We're a quick team. We move the puck well, and we love to fly. Listen, we love to skate. And for that reason, we find ourselves up against some better competition. We're just not willing to do the small things, the stick work in the corner, the elbows. And unfortunately, when you're in that position, you get pushed around a lot on the ice, and it leads to some bad situations where guys end up taking advantage a little bit too much, and you have to push back, and it just becomes a regrettable situation for everybody involved.
Yeah, like, I know myself personally, because it's not like this has been a lingering issue for me all season long when it comes to my shoulder, because that was only about 4 games ago. It seems like a while now just because we had 2 weeks off after I hurt it, but it's only been about 4 games or so that we've played, and it just seems that in the games since injuring my shoulder, there has been at least one or two instances in almost every game where I'm thinking to myself, like, what the hell? Like, there are guys taking runs and there are guys doing this, and I'm just saying, like, this isn't fun anymore. This isn't hockey. These are just guys that are going out to hurt. And like there was that instance in the Cégep-Saint-Laurent game where I got run right behind the net by two guys at the same time. And it's like, where?
In a non-contact league.
Yeah, in a non-contact league on top of that. And then
we're playing in a contact league where everybody knew that was part of the game, and, you know, there is
absolutely
all the little stuff that goes on in behind. That's fine.
I'm all for the physical game if that's what you sign up for. But when you enter a league, and this is literally when the referee's not looking, behind the plays, in the corners, in the scrums, It's taking the little cheap shots after the fact that, you know, at some point you just have to outgrow that. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the leagues that we play in a lot of these adult leagues, there's always 3 or 4 guys that just don't get it.
Yeah, I used, because I was trying to explain to my wife, you know, where you're coming from on this one. And, you know, I'm 28 years old, so I'm not quite at that 30-year mark yet, but getting close to it. And I'd say a lot of the guys that we play against are anywhere from 20 to 23 years old. So they could easily be 5 to 8 years younger than I am.
No, I'm going to 17, 18 even.
Yeah, something.
Depending on the team that you play. But I find most of the guys that I've had run-ins with are anywhere from 20 to 23 years old. That's my experience so far. And, you know, I grew up playing pretty much from the time that I was like 4 years old. Like that. So it's been a while now that I've been playing this game. And I was always taught, like, from a very, very young age, that if you are going to give something, you have to be prepared to get it back. And that's a very key element to the game of hockey. If you're going to go throw a punch, you have to be expecting to get that punch back. If you're going to go rock a guy behind the net, you have to expect to go get yourself rocked behind your own net. That's the way that the game goes. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And it seems that there was a disconnect a couple years after I started playing. Like once I got to about 16 years old and like that point out, like when I was about 16 and say guys who were about 12 years old, that's where like that change in mentality started, where it wasn't about, okay, you punch me, I punch you. No, now it's, I'm going to go punch you, but then I'm going to go hide, or I'm going to go change, or I'm going to turn my back, and I'm essentially going to be Max LaPierre or Alex Burrows or any of those jerks that are playing in the NHL right now.
Yeah, there's no rule for an instigator in the NHL, in my opinion, let alone in a beer league.
Yeah, and this is where we're running into that situation right now, where we're not necessarily playing against Max LaPierre, but we're playing against dudes that seem to idolize him right now. Because that is their style of play. They're like that dude that punched you in the face last game and then just straight up walked away after. Like, no, you don't do that. If you punch
into a lot of trouble, because it's I'm a very bad combination of a person who doesn't really want to fight and doesn't really want violence,
well,
but has very
guy,
short
like,
view.
Half on you.
And that's exactly it. It's I'll put up with a certain amount. But when I snap, I really do snap. And in an instance where I'm standing in front of my own net, a shot comes through, I turn to face the rebound, and within the span of 15 seconds, a guy comes through, spears me in the groin, runs Adam, the goaltender, gets the forearm into Adam's head on his way back up, turns around, punches me in the face, and then immediately turns his back to me and skates off. I end up doing something stupid. I end up putting myself in a situation that I don't want to be in, that sort of embarrasses me, to be perfectly honest with you. But what else do you do after you've been wronged four times in a row by someone who won't even turn around to look you in the eye because they've done it? It's an issue where if you've got a short fuse like I do, you're going to end up in some regrettable situations. And listen, I don't want to be there, but I was put there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would have reacted that much differently than what you did. That's for sure, on that instance. Short fuse or not, there's only so much that you can take. And that guy, I'll say it, hardcore douche right now.
Oh,
I got hardcore douchebag.
He's the kind of guy that you feel bad for anybody near him in traffic on the way home. You just get this sense of, honestly, just a false sense of grandeur from guys like that in a beer league hockey game. You know, at 9:30 on a Sunday night, who's going to take a run at your goaltender and then come up swinging?
Because a weird sense of entitlement from the guy almost, where he thinks, oh, I can do whatever I want.
And the worst part is, though, is that this was happening in a game where we were already down by a couple goals with a couple minutes left in the third period. Like, we weren't mounting a comeback. This was just...
This wasn't a 2-1 game.
Yeah.
So this led to... the discussion, we haven't even really had the discussion yet. We're kind of semi-having it right now, of just, man, it's just not fun anymore.
It's also, part of it is that we're losing, too. Like, you know, we went on that nice winning streak and now we're on a losing streak because of incidents like this and just, you know, the fact that the team's having some growing pains. But there are too many... When we played that little while in the 35 division... That was fantastic because all the people we were playing with were also guys like us who had jobs and families and, you know, were there to play good hockey but not be idiots about it because they knew that, you know, they don't heal like they used to and stuff like that. That was when we were playing our best hockey because we could play, you know, the way we wanted. They were playing fine. It was all evenly matched games. It was a fantastic time. But now there are a lot of people who are just sort of sapping it out of our better players because, you know, they're just – frustrated that they can't do anything to suck at Max. These people are just ruining it, and it's not a lot of fun. But there's nothing that we can really do about it except stop playing. I don't want to stop playing.
Well, yeah, and that's the point that I've been wrestling with here. Because my issues are a little bit more than just the competition at this point. And... you know, I've been hurt now for a couple weeks now with my shoulder, and it's not getting better, and it's been in a fair amount of pain. I still can't lift my arm very high up whatsoever. I still can't turn it in certain ways. And as I'm pretty sure I've already said on the show once before, my wrist, which broke in the second game of our first season there, still is not 100%. I finished that season. It obviously healed wrong. And since then, it hurts every game. Like, I'm not going to shy away from that fact. It hurts. You know, I'll be able to get through about a period. And then for the last two, it's right back to where it almost was when it was broken. And it'll hurt for about a day after that. And so it's not necessarily something that I need to stop playing from. It's just, you know, painful, but not too painful, but almost more uncomfortable. And, you know, playing a game where you're using your wrists a lot, whether it be for stick handling, shooting, or just moving your stick around here and there, having a wrist like that, it doesn't help that much. That matter much. Jeez, I should probably
turn my phone. You nerd.
I should probably turn my phone on vibrate or something like that. You'd think I was a pro or something at this. but yeah, and so that's kind of the issue where I am right now, where I'm not sure if I even want to play. I know I've already told both of you I'm not playing this coming week and to only call me again once the playoffs start. I'm going to hopefully heal my shoulder to a certain point that hopefully it'll be fine for the playoffs. But trust me on this one, taking myself out of the next game or the next two games was a very tough decision, which I'm still struggling with right now. And you broke up there. What was that?
I said, oh, how far we've come since playing through the pain.
Well, no, it's not even necessarily a question of playing through the pain, because I can go through a whole game.
Admit it.
And just not do certain things. Like last game, I tried to take a slap shot, and I immediately knew it was a bad idea.
Yeah.
Pretty much from the start of that slap shot, I knew that was probably the worst move that I could have done in that instance. But I can still play. Like, I can still do things here and there. Like, I can still be an asset defensively. I just might not be the asset offensively that I always have been.
You've got to take the time off because you've got more and more stuff to deal with now.
Well, yeah. But, like, for me, like, obviously, yeah, like, hanging out with my son and being okay for him is priority number one. But I can still do that right now. I mean, he's currently asleep in my arms. That's fine. I'm holding him no problem. It's not like that first night when I came home after originally hurting it. That's not an issue anymore. And I've even after last game, after it was hurting, I was still fine. Like, it just hurt, but not to that extent where I'm going to say, okay, I got to stop right now. Like, I'm stopping right now because I'm looking at everything and going, okay, we're playing against a bunch of jackasses. Like, I'm going to go out and say a lot of these teams, complete idiots. And
you know what? It's not even a reflection of our league. It's really just the group of teams we were put with.
No, for sure. 100%. And that's why I'm saying I feel like this year is worse. Because winter season, I didn't feel this way at all. And even the season where I broke my wrist, I didn't feel that the teams were especially dirty.
Like, no, there's always one or two guys in any league. But this season, it seems as if every team has three or four.
Exactly. And that's where I am, where I'm thinking, okay, I'm already playing not at 100%. I've already had at least two instances in the last three or four games where I could have seriously been hurt. I mean, a guy stepped on me. I have a cut on my leg. I'm sure it's healed at this point. But I got home from that game the other night, and I was like, man, my leg hurts. I couldn't figure out why. I looked down, and there is there's a cut on my leg with, like, two very close together lines, the exact width of a skate blade. A dude stepped on me. That is the kind of player mentality that we play with.
Yep. Hey, listen, when I was in midget hockey, I was playing when I was in high school hockey, midget age, we had our team kicked in the stomach by an opposing defenseman in a corner scrum. and that was 14 stitches.
Yeah. So, and then last game, you know, there was that instance where a guy just completely decided to throw me to the ice. And then there was an instance at the end of the game where, you know, I couldn't push the guy as hard as he was pushing me because I didn't have the strength in my shoulder. So once again, got knocked down and whatnot. And like, I'm thinking to myself, like, it's not necessarily worth it for me at this point. And my internal struggle is because I've always grown up playing on, you know, I can't speak for everybody on our team or anything like that, because I don't know everybody's background. But I grew up playing, like, real competitive hockey. Like, we're talking double-letter hockey. You're on the ice just about every night because that is all you do. Like, you are playing hockey not just to play, but to ultimately achieve something through your playing hockey. And there, from a very young age, there was always that mentality that was instilled into my brain where it was, you do what is best for the team. If you... You know, I wasn't always a goal scorer. You know, I still don't necessarily consider myself a goal scorer right now. But if that's the role that I have to play a little bit here, that's fine. If I need to go score a goal, I will do my damnedest to try and go and score. And growing up, I was always the third line center. I was always the guy that shut down. That was my role because that was what was best for the team. And right now, I'm looking at the situation going like, okay, I might be in a little bit of pain. I might not necessarily feel comfortable or anything, but what's best for the team is for me to go out and still try and block as many shots as I can. Like, I think I blocked maybe 8 or 9 shots last game. You know, I was diving around to try and do whatever I could to try and make that save so that Adam wouldn't have to. Because,
you know,
that we leave him wide open enough that he has to do it on his own anyway most of the time. Try to give the guy a break as best that I possibly can, you know, and my mentality. It's always what's
appreciated, James.
Best for that team.
What's funny, because really we talk about enjoying the game less, but essentially for the same reason, which is we struggle with the fact that we're at the end of the point of our lives where do everything for the team is the proper thing to do. Now, you're on one side of it saying, you know, I need to take care of my health. I need to not necessarily sacrifice so much of my body for the team, whereas I'm on the other side with these other players we play against saying, listen, you guys need to just stop doing what's best for the team in every circumstance in terms of quit with the crap behind the whistle, quit with the butt ends to the ribs, quit with the spears when nobody's looking. This isn't about doing what's best for the team. The hockey we're playing is about having a good time. And if you're not doing that, you miss the point.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, hey, in my mentality of go do what's best for the team, I still maintain in the...
For a lot of guys our age struggle with.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, like, I'll point out that those guys may think they're doing what's best for their team, but in my, well, let's say 23, 24 years of playing hockey, my mentality of doing what's best for the team, I can honestly say I probably have less than 20 penalties ever.
Hey, but and again, these guys grew up in a system that led them to a different mentality. And that, listen, when you're playing full-tier, full-on contact, competitive hockey, there is a role for one or two guys on every team. Push and shove after the whistle that have that grit and sandpaper to their game. It just doesn't belong in our Sunday night beer leagues in an abandoned arena in the West Island of Montreal.
Yeah, and... Like, it sucks because there's a lot more to my reason for not having fun, and I don't know if necessarily this is the place to get into it. as my son is starting to wake up right now, but yeah, mine necessarily maintains from the because this is the struggle that I'm having. Is where I'm always trying to do what's best for the team, but my sitting out here, I don't feel like I'm doing that. Like, I feel like I'm being a bad person for the team right now if I say, okay, well, I'm not going to play the next 2 or 3 games.
No, I mean, honestly, if you look at it, and especially in terms of a team like ours that will, you know, continue on forever, what's best for the team is to have you healthy long term, and not to have 2 games in December of 2012 to be the deciding point in your career. That's whether you last 3 more seasons with us or 15.
Oh boy, I don't think my son likes the idea of me playing that long.
Oh man, he doesn't like the idea of you not playing.
You
got to
play until he can replace you.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I don't know. Well, you know, he could probably replace me at 18. So 18 years from now, yeah, I'm good to go. I still got 18 years left in me. That's.
You'll have a beard in 12.
So one of the other things about the whole, well, hockey hasn't been fun for a long time. I forget. I think you threw out the timeline of almost like 2 months now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Had a bad time with our division and just really the frustration of a team that's not playing well compounding on top of it. Like as a team, we've been in a slump, and when you're not winning, every other problem seems magnified. And I mean, that's just the reality of team sports.
Yeah. And so like, this is another point that I wanted to bring up. It's just, you know, this is a game that we all know and love and whatnot, but I know for myself personally, I haven't been having fun for a little bit longer than 2 months now. And what should normally be like that moment of the week where you're like, awesome, it's Sunday night, got to go pack my bag and head off to the arena. I find myself recently just being like, ugh. This again, you know, and like, I hope that it hasn't necessarily affected my on ice ability and that I'm still maintaining my normal level of play, but it's killing motivation. That's for sure. And like, what is it like? I don't know for you if it's killed your motivation to get up and go to a game on Sunday night, but like, if it hasn't, like, how is your motivation still there?
You know what, to be honest with you, it's tough to show up a lot of times when you're in a bad funk. It's just the reality of sports, though. You know what, it's twice as fun to show up when you're on a winning streak. And at the end of the day, you just got to go. I mean, this is what we do. This is a big part of who we are. Like you mentioned, you grew up in the game for 20-odd years. You don't give up because you had a bad couple months. You realize that just like everything else in your life, the game's got ebbs and flows, and it'll pay off in the long run. This is more of a looking back at the total experience of hockey is much more than the hour you spend on any given week. And so far, it's been a massive net gain for me. So, you know what? You hit frustrating times. You learn stuff from that.
Speaking of frustration, I'm not sure what he's frustrated about. I'm thinking he has to fart or poop. So a lot like Adam, essentially. You guys even still there? I don't even know.
Yep.
Okay. I made an Adam joke, if you didn't hear it.
Yeah, no, I heard it. It was fantastic. Cue the crickets.
Hey, all you do is fart and poop.
Okay.
Well, okay, you fart, that's for sure. You fart a lot.
Sure.
Well, what about you, Adam? Where's your thought on the whole?
I'm not having as bad a time as you guys are because I'm not as exposed to it, and I'm perfectly happy waiting to punch that idiot guy in the head if he comes up to me. Sure, I'm not enjoying losing because when it comes down to it, I'm letting in more goals than the other goalie, and that's, you know, a big part of the problem. But
that usually is why we lose.
Well, yeah, there you go. And, you know, it just – I'm still wanting to go. I think – I intend to play our next game. We're going to win our next game because we have to win our next game. And, you know, I know our team can win. I know we're a great group of guys. And it's fun, man. I'm still having fun. It just pisses me off to lose. If I take time off, I'm afraid I won't go back. Not because I wouldn't be interested, but just because I'd get fat and lazy. But I'm not going to stop anytime soon. I mean, it hurts me a lot to play a lot of the time these days, but I'm still doing it. I mean, because it's not anything like you guys have. It's not just that crap that is because I'm too old for this, as Danny Glover would say anyhow. But no, I mean, I understand where you guys are coming from, and I can but I just want to go out and play and win now. And, you know, that's all. You need to stay off until you're better, because there's no point in destroying your shoulder entirely for the sake of, you know, your league hockey ever.
Well, you know, if it was the finals.
Tell Lisa it's Crossbar with a K.
I know, she totally said something as soon as she posted it. She was like, I totally spelled Crossbar with a C, I'm sorry.
I wrote it on the
comments. Yeah, that is my lovely wife, Lisa, not spelling the name of our show right. You can see how much she cares about my endeavors.
It's all right, dude. You didn't care enough to know what the pun was for the first month.
Yeah, that's pretty lame.
I still spelt it right.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't know how you were spelling it right.
But you're putting random capitals all over the place, too. It took you a while.
Yeah, well, I didn't know if we were technically taking cross and then bar as two words. Because I figured there was some kind of pun with the K, and I wasn't quite sure. But hey, I got it.
It's complicated how I hit it there in my first name.
Yeah, I know, eh? Jeez, you jerk. All right, so we're closing in on, 9:35 right now. Anything else?
You know what? I think we've dusted over every issue in hockey this week.
I believe we did. I believe there's not much else to go with right now. I'm good with calling this one early. What about you guys?
It is the dead heat of summer, and next week we will be chock full of legalities, technicalities, and collective bargaining agreement talk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, CBA. That's once again, still didn't touch in on that. Oh, boy.
Hey, Bob, there's something useful to talk about.
There was an offer, and there may be another that we're not allowed to see yet. That's the news.
Yeah. You know what? I honestly, looking at what the NHL has offered already, I'd like it if the league went more in that direction.
I honestly have not looked at the collective bargaining agreement yet.
Oh, really? You haven't seen any of the things that the league proposed?
Just that the revenue sharing would be down. Other than that, no. I've honestly been elbow deep in primer and red paint for the last 5 days. I got caught up on all my contract status talks for today's episode and didn't get too deep into the CBA.
All right, cool. Then I want to throw a couple of the NHL suggestions your way and see what you think on them.
Let's go.
All right. First one, entry-level contracts, 5 instead of 3 years.
No, I don't like that. Let these guys make their money, to be perfectly honest with you.
That one either.
These kids work hard. They work their way through junior hockey. They live with billet families. They give up a lot of times in hockey, more so than in other sports, on the chance to get a free education coming up through. The ones that do make it, let them get paid. Let them make their money. They've got a very short window to do it. And you know what? A lot of these guys, you hear the talk about Shea Weber and his $110 million deal. The average guy is not going to get it. He's going to get 3 or 4 years in the league at a minimum salary. You know what? Let these kids make a few dollars while they can.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm totally with you on that one. But some of the ones that I do agree with was a 5-year cap on contract length.
Yeah, I like that. I also, however, would also like to see a franchise tag similar to what the NFL's got. I don't like the idea of a team that drafts well and builds well being blown up simply because they happen to sign all their good players near the same date. You should be able to hold on to a core of your franchise and to lock that down with some kind of security.
Oh, boy. I don't know if anybody else could hear that, but I definitely could. Also, there was the stipulation that contracts have to have the same amount of money every year. Like, no more this front-loaded and really cheap back-loaded and all that kind of stuff. It is, if it's a 4.5, then it's 4.5 every year kind of thing.
That makes sense. I mean, it's stupid to say someone's got a $26 million, well, I don't know, man. I just it's Yeah, I say it makes sense. I can't make sense of it at this point, though.
I like that rule if you're not going to put in contract length stipulations. I think this is a situation where, listen, you're going to get one or the other. If you want to sign me to a five-year deal, then you should be able to front-load the hell out of it, in my opinion, and do what you can on the salary cap. If you got to build a contender now, you should still be able to manipulate the salary cap in some way. Otherwise, you're getting back to the days where general managers were just talent evaluators and not savvy businessmen that they're required to be today. If you're going to let the terms of the deal go for a very long time, then absolutely make them all the same, and that way, you know, a team can't maneuver too heavily around the rules. But again, I'm a fan of sort of a hybrid solution here.
Yeah, no, I'm man. I know that you guys probably can't hear that, but that's probably going to show up in the recording. I'm gonna leave it as a secret in case neither of you heard that. But let's just say there was a tiny machine gun going off there. yeah, like you said there, it's one or the other when it comes to the cap on the length or on the everything has to be evenly dispersed. I like the idea more of the evenly dispersed instead.
Yeah, I really do too.
Yeah, I like that one technically more than the other one, but hey, you know what? If they're not going to do the evenly dispersed, then yeah, I'm okay with the five-year cap.
Yeah, I think that's a good solid plan B, but I really don't think that there's a future in that. I don't think the players are going to agree to that. I think you're going to... Listen, there's still going to be guys who really like the idea of locking down long-term and getting their guaranteed money. And as long as you can do that fairly within the salary cap, I don't think you're hurting anybody to sign a guy like Shea Weber, a guy like Steve Yzerman, a guy like Joe Sakic back in the day. Get these guys on their 10- and 12-year contracts. As long as they're not fudging the books to make it happen, I say go for it.
Some of the other stipulations were... no more salary arbitration. That one I actually don't agree with.
No, me neither. Listen, that's the fairest way to get to a middle ground in a lot of cases, and you've got to have a neutral third party when it comes down to a relationship as complex as it can be between a player and his team.
And one of the points that I definitely feel 100% has to be in there is the eliminating signing bonuses.
You say they should get rid of signing bonuses?
Yes.
Why?
I'm okay with like the personal bonuses where it's like, oh, hey, if you go get, you know, 20 goals this year, we'll give you an extra $2 million. I'm okay with those. But, you know, hey, here's $10 million because you signed this contract. No, I don't like that.
What's the problem with it?
I just don't like that idea. Like, that's just giving away money.
Giving the guy an added incentive to come and join their team. I mean, they're already going to throw him a pile of money so they can afford it anyway, so here's an extra $10 million just to ice the cake.
Yeah, but I feel...
What, that's an unfair advantage for that team versus the other team?
That extra money if the team offers him just better personal bonuses.
I think that you're... In principle, I probably agree with you, but I think that this is probably... a field that extends well beyond that of professional sports. Signing bonuses are the rite of passage in when it comes to capitalism. Look, if you've got more money and you can throw it at the highest talent that you can find on the free market, you win. And that's, in principle, I agree with you. If you want to be fair, if you want to sort of make sure that teams like Columbus have the same advantage when it comes to landing free agents. But
exactly. And that's one of the things.
Biggest market, the biggest customer base wins. And in a lot of cases, signing bonuses are just a way to do that. I don't think you'll ever get rid of them.
Yeah, and you brought up the Columbus situation, and I'll go right back to the Shea Weber signing. There was a very heavy bonus structure for the first, I believe, 11 months of that guy's contract. Which
yeah,
is gonna,
near $17
million. Yeah, I thought it was 28.
I thought it was 26.
No, is it?
It's something very high.
If you're over the 11-month period, yeah, I was looking at the season, sorry.
Yeah, and so, you know, for that much money over a little amount of time, that's where I heard a lot of hockey insiders saying, like, hey, Nashville may want to match, but they might not be able to financially be able to, sort of thing.
Well, I think that's unfortunate, but again, it's, you know what, that's the advantage of a larger market. It sucks. Sometimes it's not fair, but if you want to put a hockey team in Columbus, you can't expect it to compete with a hockey team in Montreal or New York City.
$68 million over the first 6 years.
I think they can work out a few rules that will allow a smaller market team like Columbus to compete with a larger market team, say, of the New York Rangers or the Philadelphia Flyers. Because, yeah, obviously New York
can grow.
What was that?
I think that that's what the salary cap is for. That is your safety net.
But you get into the signing bonus purpose. Like, the Columbus Blue Jackets can't afford to give somebody a $10 million signing bonus, but the Philadelphia Flyers or the New York Rangers might be able to. And
well, you have to look at that as
right, like,
I just think you have to look at it as the open market rewarding the strongest fan base. I mean, if there are more people cheering for Pepsi than Coke, Pepsi gets to sell more product.
I know, and I'm just saying that if you don't have those signing bonuses, then you allow for guys to head to places like Columbus, because then they can maybe work out a better deal with personal bonuses. So, hey, maybe a couple better players end up over there. Now Columbus gets to become a better team because, you know, as we were stating earlier, we're not necessarily having fun playing for a loser. Well, how much fun is it spending money to go watch a loser? You know, Tampa Bay's fan base dwindled when that team sucked, but look at how good it was in 2004 when they won the Stanley Cup. If you can make every team at least closer to a level playing field without those signing bonuses, you give every team a chance to have that fan base, which allows all of those teams to also put in more money to personal bonuses.
James, you still got to have the market for it, too. I mean, it's not just bringing in the players. It's going to make them fill up a 20,000-person arena.
I'm not saying that, like, if Columbus were to go sign, like, if Columbus went and signed Zach Parise and Suter, obviously, yeah, they might sell a couple tickets for the first 10 games. But after that point, you're still going to have to put the product on the ice. And that, from there, is the job of the coaching staff and everything from there. But guys walking away from specific teams or not even wanting to go sign for specific teams, you know, that's where I want to get rid of that more.
But I don't think that you can. I think that you're necessarily trying to create a perfect world by doing that. I don't think that anywhere in free market capitalism, in any company, in any industry, is there a level playing field created for the top 30 corporations in the industry. When it comes down to it, there are always 4, 5, or 6 who simply have the market, simply have the product, simply have the competitive advantage over the others, and that's the way it is. It's the way it is in every professional sport. It's the way it is in every big dollar industry, really, that we have in North America. And I think it's great to try to create a more balanced playing field, but at the end of the day, you have to reward the fact that New York City generates $500 million to $1 billion in revenue a year, whereas Columbus generates $200 million. It's simply a better market and deserves a better product accordingly.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, but you don't agree with it because at heart you're a commie, but the fact is that's just how it works, man.
Adam Smith agrees with me.
No, I just think that whether you're a big or a small market, like, I think everybody should be able to have that same competitive advantage in...
That's why they have a salary cap. That's why they have revenue sharing. There are a lot of tools in place to do that. I just don't think the signing bonus is fair grounds. I think that the way that professional sports works, that's just one that the players are never going to give up.
It's like tipping, man. You just got to live with it, even if the service ain't that great.
Yeah, I don't know. I still wish that there was a way to get rid of it, or at least put a cap on them. You know, like, put a max signing bonus.
Yeah, I could see that, sure.
something that's not too ridiculous that at least people can compete with. And like no like $10 million to $15 million signing bonus or, hey, we're going to guarantee you $28 million over the next 11 months. That's a little crazy.
A little.
It is when you could, no, anyway, yeah.
It depends, though. I mean, hey, it's if they generate that much revenue for the New York Rangers.
You're talking about, like, fan bases and everything like that. Nashville has a hell of a fan base, and that team possibly lost out on one of their biggest ticket players because just they're a smaller market than Philadelphia, and they might not have been able to afford $28 million to one guy over the next 11 months. Like, that would have been really terrible, and, like, that's the thing that's going to ultimately kill a team like Nashville, which will help kill that fan base, and you'd go from a team that, like, was, like, as we were saying earlier, one of the most rocking buildings in the league. You take Shea Weber out of that team, you start taking guys out of that because they can't afford to compete with the big boys in the league, you're starting to look at, oh, well, what the hell's the point of going to see the Nashville Predators play?
Or instead, you get yourself into a situation like you're about right now where the owners absolutely, definitively are 100% on board as being hockey owners, are now committed to definitely building a winner in Nashville, and don't necessarily have to be wishy-washy back and forth with their fans. The fans know for a fact this is an owner who's serious, this is a product that's real, and now we have that kind of affirmation. We know he's committed, and you gain more support in the community because you're willing to shell out that money. I mean, in a lot of ways, it just sort of runs the weaker contenders out of the pool.
I still don't like it. Like, I just feel like it's going to hurt a lot of, like, a lot of that, like, little engine that could type teams.
Yeah, but those are engine that could, they still do.
Hey, listen, we talk about overexpansion all the time. We've already agreed that the team is 3 to 4 teams too big.
Oh, for sure.
The league, excuse me.
Yeah, but I don't want to see, you know, especially in the case of the Shea Weber. Like, yeah, obviously it worked out great and whatnot, but there was a real while there where a lot of people were saying, hey, Nashville cannot afford this. Like, there's obviously, yeah, the owners want to keep them there, but if they just seriously don't have the money for it, that's the kind of thing that I don't think a fan base should be punished for. Just because they...
Yeah, I see your point, I do. But I don't... I just feel like there are a lot of safety measures in place to keep those fan bases from being punished and to keep the playing field as level as possible. There still, in my opinion, need to be some advantages to having a larger market. And you know what? Signing bonuses is a fair ground for me. I'm all right with that being there.
I personally, I think that just, hey, if you have the larger market, then your benefit is you make more money. Because ultimately, that's all, you know. That's all.
I think they should also have. I mean, hey, success breeds success. That's the way it's always worked, and sport is business. That's just the way it's always going to have to be, too.
I guess so. But I'm hoping that something can be done.
Us both being, you know, respectively Red Sox and Yankees fans, I find it funny that you're okay with a very different mentality as you cross over sports.
Well, hey, like, if we want to get into baseball contracts, I think...
Oh, I don't want to get into baseball contracts, actually.
I don't like how the Red Sox and the Yankees necessarily go about making their teams, but I like the Red Sox, you know.
I hear you.
You know, there's... The passion for team has nothing to do with necessarily how they go about making that team. It's the
team. I agree.
That's the team.
Otherwise, I would never be a Habs fan.
That's true. And hey, you almost weren't for a little while right there.
I had some rough patches. I've been going through a transitional phase.
Yeah. But yeah. If they're not going to get rid of them, at least some kind of cap on them. I'll be okay with that, but I'd like to see it with the cap.
I'll meet you in the middle on that.
Well, I'd like to see the players at least give some concessions on that signing bonus, because I do think that it hurts some teams.
I'd like to see a 10. I could do it with a $10 million limit.
I'd like to see a 5 to 7 limit.
No way.
No?
No, 2 years salary.
Like maybe the signing bonus is a certain percentage of the contract. Hey,
that's what I just said. A 2-year salary.
Oh well, I don't know. You cut out.
Oh sorry. Yeah, I would like to see it in 2-year salary.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. That works. Hey, that works really good for me then.
That way, Zach Parise can get 12 to 14 million. That seems fair to me. You know, the lesser players can get $6 million. Sergei Kostitsyn can get a $6 million bonus. I'm all right with that.
Yeah, no, hey, that sounds really good, and then that is obviously dependent on the contract that you're offering to the guy in the first place.
Exactly, and then the better you are, the more money you open yourself up to.
Yeah, and then obviously if you're going to be paying a $12 to $14 million contract, that means you're also paying him the higher salary anyway. None of this, not that it happens all the time, but maybe a guy signing a $5 million contract with a $10 million bonus, that's a little much. But we'll go with that. 2 years.
No team has given that out for 1 year anyway.
Yeah, but 2 years, I'm good with that. There we go.
I like it.
Just let us hash out the CBA.
All right, we're done. I think we just did.
Done. Hockey will start in October on schedule.
Send those guys on vacation. Tell them to start training camp.
Well, did we? We didn't figure out revenue sharing though.
I'd be perfectly honest
revenue
with you.
For all.
I'm going to go ahead and plead ignorance on the revenue sharing scheme. I'm not an accountant. I assume the accountants will deal with that.
Yeah, because, obviously when it comes to numbers and math, being in radio, I kind of went the other way in my schooling.
I'm a writer.
When they start talking hockey-related revenues, that's where I feel like things start to get a little shady.
Yeah.
Where I don't really know who to believe on this one, where the players are like, oh, well, we deserve this much money of this. But then the NHL could say, oh, well, the related revenues to the hockey that you're bringing in or whatever like that only equal to this. Meanwhile, the owners are making bajillions of dollars here and there.
It seems to me they're both pretty responsible for all that hockey-related revenue. I'm sure they can split it up like grown-ups.
Yeah, so hopefully they can. I'm really curious to see what the players come back with, because this was definitely an NHL heavy proposal. But obviously, as their first one, they're going to go for best case scenario, and then go from there.
And we'll talk all about it next week.
Hopefully, we will. Maybe all in the same room. Maybe not. But the wonders of technology allow us to be in different places at the same time.
It's a good time, isn't it?
It's a wonderful time to own a computer. So, guys, thanks so much for Skyping me on this one. It was fun, to say the least. Thanks to my son for joining us and not making too much of a fuss, I guess.
To all of our listeners, as well as our readers at www.offthecrossbar.com, and also thank you for the fact that
there was a lot of cutting out on Adam's part there, so I'm going to say thanks to the listeners, thanks to the readers, and thanks to our sponsors, backsportspage.com, as always. And I'm even going to throw in a quick plug for Corner Cuts, for always helping us, let us use their studio / hair salon, I will say. If you have any recent baby additions to your family, go check out well.ca through the link on our website. Best prices for just about all baby products that you can find. Hey, hint, hint, Craig. That one's for you, man. Until next week, guys, thanks for joining me. I don't think they're there anymore. That's awesome. I'm going to call it a night, go hang out with my son. But for now, you have just gone off the crossbar.